Fans of Kurt Vonnegut now have the chance to delve into his most intimate thoughts through an extraordinary collection of his personal correspondence, spanning a 60-year period and compiled by his lifelong friend Dan Wakefield. Kurt Vonnegut Letters bears all the hallmarks of Vonnegut's fiction, sometimes biting and satirical, at other times achingly sweet, and always alive with the unique point of view that made him such a cultural icon. Again, the name of the book is Kurt Vonnegut Letters. It is edited with an introduction by Dan Wakefield, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Dan Wakefield to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight.
Thank you. Good to be here.
A delight to have you here. When did you meet Kurt Vonnegut?
In 1963, although I had corresponded with him before that, we went to the same high school in Indianapolis, and he was 10 years older than I am, but I heard about him when I was a senior. I told one of the teachers I wanted to be a writer, and they said, well, there's one boy does that, boy named Vonnegut, had a story in Collier's Magazine. So I used to go to the barber shop and read Collier's and the Saturday Evening Post and read his short stories, and that's the way he got started.
How did this project come to be for you of curating and editing these letters from Kurt Vonnegut?
Well, I wasn't really curating. I just I was asked by the Vonnegut estate because they knew that I had been a friend of his and had been known him throughout his life from the time we met, and they decided I'd be a good person to do it. So they supplied me with a lot of letters. A lot of letters came from universities and individuals, and it was a big variety, and I had over 1,000 letters to choose from. And it was very hard because his letters are just as entertaining and witty as and wise as his novels and stories.
You go by decades, where you start with the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. That's the way you lay the book out.
Yes, yes. And the first letter in the book is a very powerful letter that he wrote to his family when he had just been released as a prisoner of war, and World War II was over, and he had been a prisoner of war in Dresden, Germany, and was there during the big firebombing. It was one of the last Allied raids of the war. Both the British and U.S. Air Force did this firebombing of Dresden, which nobody thought would be bombed because it was not a military target, but it killed 135,000 people. And Vonnegut, the way he survived, he and the prisoners had been quartered in an underground meat locker. And that's how they survived that ordeal. And that was the inspiration for Vonnegut's book, Slaughterhouse Five, and that was the book that really made him a literary figure around the world.
You write in your introduction, no outside interpreter will ever be able to express this life as truly and as deeply as these letters that Vonnegut wrote to his children, his friends, his publishers, his academic advocates, his critics, and those who sought to ban his work. This really is as close as we'll get to an autobiography, then, isn't it?
Well, to an autobiography, yes. Yes, there was a biography. But as far as an autobiography, I think this serves as a wonderful autobiography. And actually, it's the first time that the letters themselves have been published in a book. And I think, you know, one of the things, there's so many things. I mean, there's wonderful letters to his children, letters to friends he kept up with from high school, to the students he taught at Iowa in the 60s. He's very loyal, very supportive of his fellow writers and his students and certainly his family. and all that comes through in the letters. And also, one of my favorite letters, because it explains a lot about him, was, you know, Slaughterhouse-Five was banned. Sometimes it's still, they still try to ban it just because of a few words. And when it was, after it was first published, I think the first big banning was done by the Drake, North Dakota School Board. And they not only banned the book, they burned copies of it in the high school furnace. So Vonnegut wrote a wonderful letter to the head of that school board. So if I could just read you one short paragraph from that.
Please do.
Is that okay? He says to this the head of this school board, "If you were to bother to read my books, to behave as educated persons would, you would learn that they are not sexy and do not argue in favor of wildness of any kind. They beg that people be kinder and more responsible than they often are. It is true that some of the characters speak coarsely. That's because people speak coarsely in real life, especially soldiers and hardworking men speak coarsely, and even our most sheltered children know that. And we all know, too, that those words really didn't damage children much. They didn't damage us when we were young. It was evil deeds and lying that hurt us."
It's pretty powerful stuff.
Yes, and throughout his life, he fought against banning books, not only his books, but those of other writers. And, you know, some of our greatest books, people have tried to ban them. You know, The Catcher in the Rye, Huckleberry Finn, even To Kill a Mockingbird, because there's one place in it when a character uses the word hell. And, of course, these attempts are always defeated because it's part of the Constitution of freedom of speech. So a lot of people have to keep learning that.
I was especially moved by some of the early letters that he wrote to his father that go simply, "Dear Pop."
Yes, yes. And in fact, he wrote a Dear Pop letter the first time he had one of his stories published. And he said that, you know, if in those days those big weekly magazines, which are no more, used to pay writers very well. And he said if he told his dad if he could publish five or six more, he could quit his job as a promotional PR man for General Electric. And he later said that first story he sold was like the Stonehenge of his own literary life. That was the big turning point.
I interviewed him shortly before his death, around the time that A Man Without a Country was released. And
yeah.
And he said to me that you know, he was he looks at his work and he was proud of the fact that his books were still in print.
Yes.
But never quite understood, you know, he'd never won any major literary prize, and felt that the reason for that was because he came from what he referred to as a shabby literary background.
Well, and also he was never really part of the New York literary scene, even though he lived in New York in his last years. And in fact, that's, to me, shockingly apparent now that this book, which has received great advanced reviews and wonderful reviews all over the country, I mean, Publishers Weekly compared his letters to the letters of Keats. And yet, there's been no review, and I don't expect any, in the New York Times Book Review, the New York Times Daily Paper, the New Yorker Magazine, or New York Magazine. And I think it just speaks to the fact that he was considered an outsider in that literary establishment. And I think partly because when he started off, he was known or categorized as a science fiction writer, which he didn't like. He felt like that was putting you in a special drawer that wasn't very highly regarded. But the wonderful thing to me is that, as you say, all his books are in print, and he keeps being read, and he keeps being taught in schools and colleges and high schools. And a friend of mine who's a professor of English at University of Massachusetts at Boston said, you know, it's hard to get students now to read Updike and Roth, but they still love Vonnegut. So that somehow his themes and his work continues to speak to people. It's not sort of limited to if you have to be interested in a particular era.
I love, there is a letter in the book where he says, at 84, I resemble nothing so much as an iguana, hate travel, and have nothing to say. I might as well send a spent Roman candle in my stead. Even to the last moments of of his life and career were certainly very beautiful in the language that he chose.
Well, yes, and also he did write a late book, a short book that I love called A Man Without a Country, which was a book of essays.
Right.
And that was very powerful. And in fact, and when that book came out, he was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and got a whole new audience of young people. So that was really nice, too. And yes, he said toward the end of his life, he really did more with artwork and did a lot of drawings and silk screen printings. And he said once that he felt like Herman Melville's Whalers, that he'd said everything there was to say. But he did find more to say in that last book, A Man Without a Country.
The name of the book is Kurt Vonnegut Letters. It's edited and with an introduction by Dan Wakefield. It is published by Delacorte Press. Dan, a great pleasure to have you on the program and speaking about one of my great idols. And I thank you very much for spending time with us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
A great pleasure. Kurt Vonnegut Letters is the name of the book. Dan Wakefield is the editor and has written the introduction. The book is published by Delacorte. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.